Hey guys, I just want to hop on really quick and give a trigger warning before this episode started. We talk about domestic violence and abuse, which is timestamped in the episode notes, ableism and fat phobia, harmful racial and body type fetishization, and then essentially the second half of the episode, we talk about decolonization, racism, violence against black bodies, queer phobia against people of color, slavery, sexual assault and rape against black people, and then stealing indigenous and black spiritual practices. And that is essentially after a certain timestamp, which is in the episode notes as well. And then we briefly talk about suicide, which is timestamped in the episode notes also. And then I wanted just to give a quick thank you to our listeners from TikTok. It's been so nice to have some new listeners reach out. And I know a lot of you came for the deconstruction content. And we don't cover that a lot in this episode. If you are looking for more deconstruction content, episodes 5, 9, 10, and 11 are great. I would highly recommend you stick around for this episode as well. It's incredibly educational, and the way that Marjani speaks about polyamory and the nuance and intersectionality of how to decolonize it is incredibly thoughtful. But if you are also looking for additional content surrounding deconstruction, those episodes are great. I will also be releasing an episode in 2 weeks, which will be a part two to my deconstruction journey. So essentially a follow-up to episode 5. And I will also be doing a Q&A and answering some questions that I was sent about, religion and religious trauma. Do I still believe in God? Do I hate religion? How did I tell my family I was leaving religion? And all of those kind of tricky questions. So if you're interested in that, that will be out 2 weeks from today. Other than that, I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Hi, all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we're going to be doing kind of a little bit of a part two episode on polyamory with Marjani of Marjani Lane. And we're going to go over some of the misconceptions, some benefits, and kind of just dive in a little bit deeper to what being poly means. But first off, we have Marjani with us. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on. I wanted to give you a space a little bit just to give some of your background and why you've chosen polyamory education as your main focus, specifically on your Instagram, and kind of how that all got started.
Yeah, sure. I go by Marjani Lane, but my name is actually Ebony. Marjani Lane is more so of the alter ego, so to speak, or the education platform. I'm 31 years old. I live in Hawaii. I am a Navy vet. I currently work as a train dispatcher, like not a train dispatcher, but like an operations center over the train dispatching. And so it's a pretty decent job. I enjoy it quite a bit. I've been polyamorous since, now at this point, it's been over 10 years, easily over 10 years. And I definitely started navigating polyamory like sophomore year of my college. And I really got into polyamory kind of like the quote unquote gateway drug via swinging. And I realized that polyamory was better fit for me. While I don't have a problem with swinging, I do, and I have continued to swing in some form or fashion, polyamory was definitely more of the more serious part of the aspect and some love style for me. I don't really consider polyamory a thing that I do or think I chose as much as I consider it a part of my identity. Marjani Lane came out about 2 years ago, 2020, like April. Even though the concept had been in my head for a while, because I realized there was like a lack of education, like accessible, easy to read education that was in, you know, representing black people. Like there's literally none right now. I can't even think of any, like, and I'm not talking like people's like, their family or them showing themselves living a polyamorous lifestyle as a black person, but just like, just general content. Like I can share this to my friends and they can see people that look like them in some form or fashion. While there's a lot of things that are just pretty much the same across the board with polyamory, no matter your race, there are some nuances that are very black specific that do, you know, change how we navigate things. So I just felt it was necessary because it was difficult for me to find information. And I know everyone didn't have that accessibility or, you know, the level of interest or the language to go through some of these PDFs, to go through some of these books. And I just want to make it easier for people who were, you know, in that position.
Yeah. And I mean, considering I did some research to try to find creators who focus on polyamory because I wanted that to be something that we covered on the podcast. And
I would agree with you in the sense that you, I think, are the only creator that I found that just researching, trying to find people that focused on like being Black and being polyamorous. Like I didn't really find a lot of resources in that facet. Did you notice, because if you only have had this platform for 2 years, you have a significant audience considering it's only been 2 years. Did you find that people like gravitated towards you and also seemed to be seeking out that education?
Yes. I was really honestly only expecting to have a predominantly Black audience. I'm going to be honest with you, but I will say most of my audience is not Black, which was even more, first it was scary because I, oh no, like what, that isn't wrong. And then the other part of it then was refreshing. I'm like, oh, people just, not they don't care. Like no, not people don't care that I'm Black. It's just like the information was so valuable that it, you know, like it was so valuable that it wasn't even like, yeah, you know, I'm aware that Marjorie Lane is Black. I'm aware this is focused on Black, you know, education, but it is still very much reasonable and accessible and, you know, digestible information that's good for me. Like I didn't know I have a very strong audience of people who, just don't, who are neurodivergent, who don't like all the, like the extra fluffy words that are getting communicated through education, and it makes it difficult for them to process that information. Like I have a strong audience for that. I have a strong audience of people who are dating interracially. I had a lady yesterday, the day her husband is Black, and she said some of the things I've said kind of helped her understand why there's so many restrictions in his head with polyamory. And that's invaluable to me. Like the fact that his wife was one, willing to seek out the information, and two, use it in their relationship, acknowledging that her husband has a different experience as a Black person. It's very, I really can't explain how I feel about it. Like every time I get a message about my content and how it helps someone, it really kind of validates that, like you see the followers every day, but it's different when someone sends you a message and they're like, thank you. Like this helped me this way. I had this conversation with my partner the other day. So because I think that it didn't exist regardless of the race thing, even though it's like my pushing point, kind of throws me off. Like I'm like, wow, you know, people really want information. They just want to know what to do on my first date. You know what? Oh, my partner and I had a disagreement about a metamorph. Could I veto them? Is that okay? Like it's just so simple. As simple as it sounds, it's like very like minute detail as it is. People are looking for those answers. And so like, I just thought it was necessary to have a space where they can at least start. I'm not the end all be all, but they can at least start the conversation.
Yeah, no, I would agree with even your content is very, I guess like to the point and digestible. And I also have a hard time with like trying to, I don't know, sift through some things, especially when they're, some platforms, I think, in all, like any topic ever, will come to the table, assuming that you have certain background information. And sometimes you get to a platform, you're trying to understand things and there's verbiage that's being used that I'm just like, okay, I don't even understand what this word means. And now I'm trying to use that word to explain something else. And so like, I'm so lost, I can't even explain it. And I've learned a lot from your page personally. And it was one of the reasons why I reached out to you, was just like, oh, this is really interesting and very, I don't know, easy to understand. And it's to the point, and it's aesthetically pleasing, which is always fun too. And something is pretty and also like gives you a lot of information. But yeah, so with that all being said, we're going to dive into a few things. Obviously, being polyamorous is there's a lot to it. And so I don't think we'll be able to cover everything. But we kind of wanted to focus on common misconceptions. And then you also talk quite a bit about what it means to decolonize polyamory on your platform, which is something that I haven't found on any other platform being talked about. And I think that that's an interesting thing to dive into as well. But let's start off with kind of common misconceptions. I think because it obviously is a facet of relationships and people's identity that is only kind of recently being talked about in a, I guess, educational way and not as a punchline or as like a judgmental way of talking. Yeah. Like that's only been in the last like few years that it's actually been like, honestly, a lot of Instagram accounts having like infographics and like actually letting, like giving people insight into what it means, despite the fact that this has been something that people have been actively living out for years and years and years and years and years. But it's just kind of recently coming to mainstream media in a way that isn't like making fun of it. So with that being said, I think there are a lot of misconceptions that a lot of people have because I guess people just haven't been as aware, which I think is partially just people not educating themselves. And there's been education out there for a long time. But what are some common misconceptions that you've noticed, and I guess that have impacted the community in your opinion?
A huge misconception is that polyamory is monogamy plus one, or just a triad where a couple has come in and they've gathered a woman. And I say gathered on purpose, is where I'm using it as on purpose. They gather a woman and, you know, that's the end all be all of polyamory. Like, to the point that I have to be very deliberate in my education to make sure people know that triads are not the only option at all. And that there's other ways to create your polyamorous lifestyle or your love style, however you navigate it. It's such a terrible misconception that it's almost like a trope in like TikToks or on Instagram. You see like people, you know, they're talking like, oh, like, you know, even like people making like funny, like you said, making funny videos, and it's like, oh yeah, well, if you're gonna be with my man, if you wanna, you know, be friendly with my man, you gotta also be with me. It's just like this weird like trope thing going on. And it's heavily fetishizing bisexual women, like overwhelmingly so. So that bisexual women who are in the polyamorous community may not feel there's a lot of options for them in that space. Even if they want a triad, it may even feel more limited to even navigate a triad because they don't want to be in a situation where there's someone's helpmate or someone's like band-aid for a failing marriage. Because that seems to be another thing. It's like a idea that this triad is going to somehow cure your failing marriage. So that misconception has like really gotten incredibly toxic. Like, we have literal terms for what is happening. Like, we have OPP, which is a one penis policy, which is usually focused on a man and his heterosexual man and his wife or his girlfriend, and him adding only they can only add women into their dynamic. And typically it's like a triad, right? Or monogamy plus one, because people who are still stuck in a monogamous mindset are trying to navigate polyamory. You know, it doesn't work out that way. Or even like unicorn hunting, where we have people who really should be swingers. Let's be honest, it should be swingers, because that term came from the swinger community, who are navigating polyamory. A unicorn is a single bisexual woman, for those who are listening, who will date, or who typically is not date, is who engage sexually with a couple. That term belongs in the swinger community, and like, I'm like, that's my hill, I'm a die on. And people using a polyamory to identify themselves. Now, might see, this what's happening is you're misrepresenting yourself, and what's happening is people are like, oh yeah, like that's what we want. We're a woman to have sex with us. Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, oh, you don't have to do polyamory for that. You can do a whole different, there's a whole bunch of other options for us here. So that's a incredibly almost like cancerous misconception. It's very much so the reason why I work so hard on my platform, because I have to fight those misconceptions on that all day. Polyamory is not about triads. It does not begin and end with triads. Triads are not the gateway into polyamory. They should not be the first thing you do unless it's something you really want to do. Like, there's 100,000 other things you can do to navigate into polyamory. So that's one. I don't know if I can go do one right. more.
But before you do one more, yeah. Can you clarify between a triad and a threesome?
Oh, of course. Yeah, a threesome is simply a sexual act between three consenting adults. That's all. That's the beginning and end of that. There's people who are in triads that have threesomes because they're sexually engaged, and there's also people in triads who have threesomes because they're not doing it all at the same time. A triad is a polyamorous intimate relationship between three people, consenting adults. I keep saying that for a reason, because I don't want to think that you're cheating is not a triad. Yes, so they're distinctly different things. Threesomes are, like I said, sexual in nature. A triad is intimate in nature, typically romantic. These people are in a romantic relationship with each other. And triads do not automatically mean you're going to have a threesome at all, because not everyone who's in a triad wants to be sexually engaged with each other at the same time. Says up.
Okay, perfect. That I wanted to make sure that was clarified, because I don't think we talked about that on the previous episode. So I wanted to make sure we had a verbiage clarification there. But yes, okay, so what's the other misconception you want to address?
Another misconception is that we have commitment issues. Like, people who are polyamorous or people who navigate polyamory just have issues with commitment, that we're just cheating. They call it cheating, like we're like allowing cheating, which is interesting to me, because cheating is not a strictly polyamorous nor monogamous thing. People can be polyamorous or monogamous or anything else and be a cheat. It's not a strictly one type of person thing. It's just an act that people do regardless of what their fixation on love. Then, you know, the idea that because commitment looks different for some polyamorous people, not every polyamorous person, you know, it's just interesting how we see commitment being as only being with one person, and that's commitment. And I'm like, there's people who've been with only one person for 15, 20 years, and that person's not committed to them. They are not committed to their boundaries. They're not committed to ensuring their partner is supported. They're not committed to uplifting their partner. They're not committed to the relationship being healthy and moving forward, no matter how that looks for them. They just kind of check off the boxes of what we call the relationship escalator, which is essentially this like societal push of dating someone. It's literally, I can break it down. It's like literally a list. It's like an escalator, like going up the steps, dating someone, getting engaged, marrying that person, buying a house, having children, children go to college, you retire, and then you die. That, as morbid as that sounds, is literally the whole premise of romance and love is pushed in that direction. So throwing in another person that's like, oh, that's not, you're not committed. Whoa, you know, like, that's not commitment. And that's not commitment. And even it's even so bad that thought process even falls into polyamorous people, where if they don't mimic some form of marriage, or if they do not, because marriage, you know, bigamy is illegal. Bigamy is multiple marriages, for those who don't know. Or if they don't live together as a polyamorous unit, they don't feel like they're actually committed or they're actually like doing the thing because of that thought process. So the fact that commitment is only defined as we are together exclusively only forever, to me, is a very weak definition of commitment. Like, if that's all you expect, then you know you're going to be in for a hell of a ride long term when you find that that's not really commitment. You know, I can sit with one person all day and be absolutely not interested in their boundaries or their, you know, how they feel, their health, could care less. So it's very frustrating that polyamory is seen as this, like, you know, everyone's going and doing their own thing, like, wild now, and everyone doesn't care, and it's just like, you know, a bunch of heathens running around, you know. So that's definitely something I've seen that's an issue, and another reason why people don't really take polyamory very seriously, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that in, this is kind of a follow-up to the next question, I guess, is in media and in mainstream media. Like, in what other ways, and maybe even in the same ways, do you feel that the polyamorous community has been misunderstood or, like, either poorly represented or underrepresented in mainstream media and society? Because, like we mentioned, it's kind of only been a more mainstream conversation that I guess is more accepting and open in the last like 3 or 4 years.
Yes. I think that media has done an atrocious job of representation with polyamory. I'm not even going to name some of the companies, specifically the studios or that have, or channels, popular web, you know, popular, like, you know, TV channels that have reached out to me wanting to do like sensational, like, segments on my, like, what I do, like, oh, well, you know, we heard that you had multiple boyfriends, or like, we heard that, you know, you're polyamorous, so you must therefore be in a triad. I'm not in a triad. And then because I'm not in a triad, they don't want to do anything with me. Like, I don't think people realize that. And I'm telling you, there's like not as an insider, right? But I'm telling you, as someone that I mean, reached out, I've seen contracts, and people are just, this is what they want. They don't want to know about, like, the time it takes, so, you know, the education that comes. They want to know about, like, how many men are you sleeping with, you know, or like, oh, you guys are in a triad, like, oh, was it because your boyfriend was cheating on you? And like, it's very frustrating, to say the least. That's because they want the drama. Yeah, they want the drama, and that's just the first layer of it. When we start breaking down, like, certain things, they want a certain aesthetic. So the aesthetic is typically focused on white bodies and able bodies. If they want to extend their branch beyond white bodies, you still need to be able-bodied, to be clear about that. You said they look a certain way. A certain aesthetic has to fit. They're not reaching out to the all-lesbian triad of women who have different shaped bodies. No. They don't want that. They want someone that's still, that could be aesthetically pleasing to the audience or attractive to the audience.
Right.
And if you'll see that in this representation when you see it online, like, nothing, you know, the only thing I've seen that's been somewhat decent at representation as far as, like, the conversation starting is the Red Table Talk. But anytime someone's I forgot the lady's name, Jada, Jada, I was going to call her Jada, Jada. But even still, like, it didn't help what happened with her and her husband, because some things, it kind of make people, like, sensationalize even their love style. But it is something that I think is incredibly frustrating. It is difficult. Like, when you see the very heavy, heavy, heavy TikTok hitters, Instagram hitters, they are aesthetically pleasing, are either white, racially ambiguous, or maybe black. But you're not going to see a Native American representation of polyamorous on TV. You're not going to see an indigenous person from South America or Central America on television for these things. I want people to be clear about it. You're not going to see a fat person. They're not going to put anyone fat up there. I've yet to see any representation of a fat person related to polyamory on any television show. And maybe it does exist. I don't watch TV like that. But I have never seen it. And it's already kind of hurtful as a black person to notice that. But when you add the extra layers, it just gets deeper. And I'm not even in those marginalized groups. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this is frustrating. So yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, and a lot of times when there is any representation of not a white person, I guess, it's often the fetishization of a certain race, where then you get into even in pornography and on that level, it just turns into, now we're just fetishizing certain races and or certain body types, where it's not actually trying to represent, it's just trying to sexualize something, which, like, we mentioned on the me and Philip were talking about on the previous episode, the whole conversation around sexualizing polyamory and assuming that it's all just sex, 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 and a whole bunch of sex hungry people that just want to have sex with as many people as possible. And when the representation, quote unquote representation, is anything but a white person, it's normally just like, ooh, sex, 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 sex. Like, how can we make this as sexual as physically possible? Which, once again, is, I think, even calling that representation is a little bit unfair.
Yes,
at a minimum. That's probably not the right word for it.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's very frustrating. Even when sometimes I've seen I've seen clips. Like, I deliberately do not watch some things, like the Sister Wives TV show, and there was a black group up there.
Yeah.
And I just saw some of the clips, and I was like, my goodness, we're screwed. they found the worst representation. This is nothing against them, nothing against those people, okay, but they found that these people have never had a actual mentor or educator in their lives related to polyamory or even at most polygyny. And I was like, this is just, I'm done. Like, I can't find our, I think it's called Find My Sister, I don't even know, but it was like oh, there's black people up there. I was like, okay, like, I'll glance at it. I glance and I turn my computer off. I was like, "That's enough for me. I can't do it. It's very hurtful, you know, to see that, and that's the best you could find. Like, that's, you didn't even try to find anybody else. You're like, yep, this is good. This is good enough. This checks the box.
Yeah. Well, and there was even the Sister Wives TV show on, like, TLC. That was like the, I don't even know what.
Was it one of the Mormons?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe it was like the guy with like the six wives or whatever. Yeah, and like,
and I remember him having a calendar even, checking off, going to see them and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, like, and even that alone, like, it's treated like the Real Housewives. Like, that's the way that it was treated. Mm-hmm. And even to the extent of, like, they had a reunion show, like putting them all together and like having, like, it was just drama. It's like you have like a, basically, you have an Andy Cohen, you have like a mediator trying to like stir up shit. And it's like, okay, well, this isn't actually, there's, and obviously it's yeah, exactly. It's, and it is TLC, to be fair. Like, they're not trying to educate, they're trying to create drama. But like, when things are represented, it's often for the sake of drama or entertainment, or like, how much tea can we spill? Even with Will and Jada, there was so much shit with people, and not Red Table Talk, but people surrounding that conversation and like doing, you know, news outlets covering that whole situation, was like just a lot of people trying to stir up shit, because they've been public figures for so long that it's like, ooh, drama, like, ooh, they're doing something unconventional. And like, how can we like either fetishize this or create it into the biggest spectacle possible? Like, how can we get as much drama out of this as we can?
It was they ran that to the ground. They ran to the ground. So I mean, it is what it is at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, and it's unfortunate too, because unfortunately, with everything that's happened since then, people are utilizing the fact that they had multiple people involved in their dynamic as justification for all this other stuff. And now it's like, okay, well, now we're going to criticize mental health. We're going to criticize stability. We're going to criticize all these different things, and we're going to cite it back to polyamory.
Which, yes, instead of holding the adult accountable that was misleading their partner, like, you know, even right. It was just very frustrating. Like, it wasn't about them having someone in. It was the fact that there was a not communication. It was very apparent that, you know, from my viewing, that the thing is, Will and Jada thing, doing open marriage or being polyamorous or maybe even swinging, that's been a rumor, quotation marks, in the Black community for well over 20 years. So, like, I think that's interesting that when it came out, like, people who were not involved or very deep in the Black community were surprised. I'm like, we all knew this shit about 2000, you know, one and stuff. Like, I don't know why y'all know one's, like, I knew that as a kid, that there was some type of, like, thing going on with them. How would I know that? Why do I know about that? So when they came out with it, I was like, yeah, we knew. Like, I don't know what this announcement was, but I think it was more so them, like, okay, everybody, we know the cat's out the bag, you know, but it spun out of control. And I'm like, see, this is, once again, because once if a polyamorous dynamic fails, it's not the blame. The blame does not fall on, like, if someone lied or cheating or there's some confusion, mm-hmm. or this didn't work out well. It falls on polyamory. It's polyamorous, right. Why it failed. I'm like, monogamous marriages fail every day. What's the difference? So, but we don't. Yeah. We don't get that space. Yeah.
That's a good point, though, because it really does. I guess the expectation from society is so much higher, and anyone involved in a polyamorous relationship are expected to be so successful and have everything perfect, and there can't be any conflict, and there can be no strife, there can be no problems. It's just like, it's got to be perfect, because you guys are already stepping out of the box, so you have very little room to make any mistakes. Like, it has to just, you guys really got to, you know, do perfect here. Whereas you have train wrecks of marriages put on, you know, shows all the time, of reality shows and things, where there are people in monogamous heterosexual relationships. And I guess it is similar for any type of non-straight relationship. It is in similar ways. It's, you're expected to succeed in every way possible. And if it didn't succeed, it's because you're not straight. It's not because of any other mistakes. It's just, oh, well, you're not straight, so that must be why this failed, compared to actually holding people accountable for mistakes that were made. Or even bringing trauma into relationships, because everyone has so much. People are very nuanced and complicated humans. Everyone has so many different things going on. Being in a relationship, period, is hard. Doesn't matter, like, what dynamic that is. And arguably, like, it takes more communication and more maturity and a lot more being present in a relationship to be able to be polyamorous and do so in a healthy way. And so it's amazing to me that there's not more praise, I guess, put on that, of, like, praising people who are in polyamorous relationships for being often much better communicators than people who are in monogamous relationships.
No, it wouldn't fit the narrative. If we said that, it wouldn't work. But it is something that is frustrating, that you can't even, there has to be no mistakes made. It's actually why I'm very deliberate about posting my partners on my page or showing anything about my relationships on my page, because if a relationship ends, some people, even if they don't want to, maybe they're not trying to, they, like, attribute, like, oh, she's an educator, even her relationships ended. Like, it's just like, relationships end. It's not a failure, it's just that the relationship ended. That's it. You know, things happen. You know, relationships should end if they're not working for you. I would hope that you would want them to end. But I think it's like that kind of, like, toxic monogamous thought process that you got to kind of fight through it to death. And polyamorous people pull on to that unknowingly. You know, they don't think they're doing it, but they're doing it. Like, no, I have to make this last. Not only just because it has to be, you know, a successful relationship is when it never ends for some reason. It's a thought process. And then, like, trying to live up to monogamous standards of success. Like, it has to be this way. If I don't make it last, and we're a failure, and you'll see relationships go on for a god-awful amount of time, just trying to, you know, kind of stick into it, like, trying to hold on to the last drop. And I'm like, you really should let this go. Like, y'all should just, you know, break apart this polycule. You guys are, like, killing each other, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you see that in monogamous relationships all the time. I mean, there are so many relationships where, I think just as a society, or at least as a Western society, I'll, like, correct myself on that. We see it as something that, like you said, has to be forever. And I remember when I was like in high school, I dated someone that said that they would not say forever to me. They wouldn't buy me any cards or ever write in like a card or in just talking to one another saying like, oh, I'm going to love you forever. And I remember like I was like 18 and I felt so offended by that. And I was like, what the hell? Like, how dare you? Like, I deserve forever. Like, I deserve a princess love story. Like, And I was so offended by it. And then like a few months into the relationship, I started kind of processing more and more. And it was like, no, that's actually probably a pretty healthy way to view a relationship, to not just promise from the get-go that you're going to, like, I mean, every love story ever in Western, like, media is, you know, infinity and, oh, I'm going to love you forever and, oh, my love will never end. This will last, you know, until, you know, the moons collide, like, whoa, 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 like all this like poetry trying to make it sound beautiful. And it's like, well, it's like, it's, if you look at any other relationship in your life, I spread this out to friendships because society was so locked on the forever thing that whenever I'd have a friendship end, it felt like such a failure. And I felt like, oh my gosh, like I failed here. And like, this was something that was supposed to be a forever friendship. We were supposed to be like on our, you know, be in each other's weddings and be on our deathbeds together, like little grandmas hanging out, like, oh, I failed. And I didn't realize until I was like probably like 20 or so that I had a few friendships that I realized like really were there in my life for a certain period of time and felt like they really, like, I don't want to say served their purpose, but like really were supportive in a time. And it wasn't a huge fallout. It wasn't like, oh, we had this big explosion. It was like, we just generally kind of drifted out of each other's lives. Mm. And it felt more of like a, oh, the universe or whomever helped kind of helped us find each other for this period of time where we both really supported each other when we needed it. And then it, our lives just didn't seem to really like, I guess, match up well after that. And there was no blow up. There was no drama. There was no nothing. And I always, like, you know, I look back on those friendships with like a lot of like, oh, like, I'm really glad I had that person and we had each other during that time, because I think that we really needed each other during that time. And I don't see that as a failure, but oftentimes when then you turn that over to a romantic relationship, it has to be something that is forever, or it's a, oh yeah, these are all my failed relationships until I found the one. And it's like, okay, well, that's probably not entirely accurate. Not that you can't find someone and be with them for a very long time, but like, just because other relationships didn't work out doesn't necessarily mean they weren't worth anything.
Yeah, it just kind of tossed it to the side like it's rubbish, really never like set right with me. I think it's how you actually accrue trauma. I think it's also how you're not able to kind of go back and maybe hold yourself accountable to some things that you were doing that were wrong. If you just like immediately like dump it, like, it was bad, so you know, it's no good. Even relationships I had that have ended and they didn't end the best, I still try to make sure I look favorably back on some things that actually I enjoyed. Or things I have learned that even if it, like, if it was a traumatic relationship, I know that's a little different for some people, but for me, I like to go back and like reassess or kind of go over, like, not necessarily hindsight bias concept, but like seeing the signs so I don't have the same situation happen to me again. But I think if you dump it immediately, sometimes you kind of like create this black hole in your head. Like, no, I didn't exist. Like, they weren't really the person for me. And I'm like, okay, like, you don't want to talk about it. You don't want to talk to me about it, but you got to kind of like, and people somehow see your failed relationship as a reflection upon themselves, which I think is definitely a heavy codependent, toxic monogamous thought process. Not necessarily a monogamous thought process, of toxic monogamous thought process with that. Like you said, the Disney movie style, like prince and princess and everyone is going to be, living happily after other, and the Disney castle and freaking like birds are going to come down with rainbows and shit. It's very like, you know, people will go through hell trying to say, well, at least I'm married, I'm still the wife. And I'm like, yeah, your house is on fire though. Like,
literally
your house is on fire. And you're just like, yeah, but I'm still married. We held on. You guys should hold on too. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm good on that one. I'm sorry. You know, like, and so I think that people can learn from that.
Who you traumatize in the process too. If you have other people involved, if you have kids involved and you're holding on, but like you're fighting every day, you're traumatizing your children, you're traumatizing people around you just for the sake of like, but we did it. It's like, okay, but like, maybe you shouldn't have, like, maybe it shouldn't have been a thing. But yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. 'Cause if you're in I've done that with certain friendships or relationships, and it's maybe taken me four or five years after the fact, and when I'm less emotionally aggravated, I guess, by the way that it ended, where I have the space or the mental space to look back, especially things that happened when I was a lot younger, of like, oh, you know what? I wasn't really a good friend in that situation. Like, I was controlling, or I was this, or I didn't communicate well, compared to when you do just block it out and say, oh, well, it ended, and oh, that person's an asshole, and like, fuck this, and just, you know, block it out entirely. You lose any opportunity to like grow from that if you continue to just block it out. Because then I'm similar, and I have a similar thought process in a similar way I approach things, of I try to find any way to grow from anything ever. And I can't always approach it from a mindset of growth right after the fact, like depending on how much it was emotionally hurtful or how emotionally charged I am at the moment. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time to be able to like calm down and think, okay, well, what can I learn from this? But I think that when you do just toss anything aside that doesn't work out, it's a very perfectionistic mindset that only leads to more, I guess, if in a perfectionist mindset, it just leads to more failure, because you're just having all these things not work out, and you're never learning, you're never growing, you're never reassessing or self-reflecting and looking at something and saying, okay, well, maybe I really liked this from this dynamic, but I didn't love this, or maybe I was not great in this, but I did really well with this. Like, let's carry that into the next friendship or relationship or romantic dynamic or whatever, and let's not carry this other thing. It totally puts you in the position of being the coming out entirely like hands clean and being totally innocent, and the other person must be the person that's just awful and terrible, and you did nothing wrong. And then when you keep doing that and nothing's working out, then perhaps it's not the other person. Perhaps it's also you, or maybe it's both.
Yeah, maybe all six relationships, you were the innocent bystander. Like, I mean, like, that's gotta be like, maybe, but I was kind of, you want to look over, make sure? Like, no, I was completely innocent. Like, oh, okay. Like, all right, cool story, bro.
Yep.
That's fine.
Yep. Well, moving forward with that, with being in a polyamorous relationship, and we talked a little bit on the last episode with Philip about being able to have someone, having multiple people in your life doesn't require one romantic partner to fulfill every single need that you have. And we kind of compared it to friendships and how you have a lot, most people have multiple friends, and they have friends that they go to for different things. And maybe you have one friend that's great with talking about relationship and family problems, and you have another friend that's really great with coming up with fun, creative things to do, or that's the friend that you go to when you want to have a really fun time and just be goofy and be yourself. And you have all these different people to kind of fulfill different needs in your life. And Philip and I kind of chatted about the fact that in a polyamorous relationship, it takes a lot of pressure off of your one singular partner. If you were to be in a monogamous relationship, you're expecting one person to fulfill every single need that you have and have the energy and the time and the capacity to do that. And so that was kind of one benefit that we talked about. But what are some other benefits of polyamorous relationship that you've experienced?
So I'm really weird about the benefit conversation always, because I'm always nervous that it's going to be like misinterpreted. But I definitely understand and agree with what Philip has said in that sense. For me, like, one big benefit I've noticed for myself was accountability. You know, I think it's kind of difficult to be accountable if you're the only one in the room, if that makes sense. If there's only one person in the room, and you two are reflecting off of each other, and you're mirroring your partner's like, hey, you're doing that thing again. Like, you always do this thing. You're like, nah, like, I don't do that. Like, I don't do that. You know, like, and you may not mean any harm by saying that, but you're like, nah, I don't do weird stuff like that. I don't do that. And it's sometimes that can turn to gaslighting, right? And it's not necessarily the fact that you intend it that way. To be clear though, gaslighting is intentional. I'm not saying you're intending it that way. But if you're just one of the person and you're this person's your all in everything, like they're your friend, they're your confidant, you're like life partner, your soulmate, all these wonderful, beautiful things. There's no one around to also kind of pay attention to things that are going on. You might get kind of, you know, lost in the sauce there. So accountability, I think for me being polyamorous, is one big thing I saw as a huge benefit. I have two personality disorders, and one of which can be very volatile. And it is when one of the ones that I have to, me being around multiple people, even though it's like literally the whole, not the thing I like to do with that specific personality disorder, me having different people hold me accountable. Like, no, Ebony, you do that. Like, yeah, I saw you do this 3 times. You do it with me. I just don't say anything. Like, oh, yeah, you definitely have a really bad habit of, like, saying, no, this is the best idea. Like, you know, just shutting people down. No, you have a bad idea. It's a terrible idea. Like, so that, you know, and having that come from multiple people, and if you tend to pick decent partners, you might be doing it. You might be doing it. If you're in a situation where you're doing something and you're talking to another partner and you're like saying, well, I might just go around, I know this is our boundary, I might do something else, your partner will probably hold your accountable. Like, hey, if you're gonna do it to me, if you do it to him or her or them, you'll do it to me. So, like, no, I don't think it's okay to do that. And it's kind of like a checks and balances feeling, I think, like having that accountability, not even just for yourself, right? People are trying to check in for you. And I think another benefit is, this is not to say that abuse does not happen in poly relationships. Domestic violence does happen in any relationship. I feel like with polyamory, especially when it's like a situation where the partners are separate, not like a triad, but like, you know, like you have 2 or 3 different partners in separate areas, someone's going to pick up something like a little sooner than if you're by yourself isolated in your home. Like, or if you're being, you know, like, or, you know, or someone's isolated, like, you may see, hey, like, I see that we've been hanging out less, something's going on, or I see that, hey, you're wearing sunglasses a lot more, like, what's going on here, like, what's happening, or I just heard the way he spoke to you, the way she spoke to you, the way they spoke to you, and it isn't, is that something that you really want to navigate, and people being pulled out of that, like, that hole.
Yeah, and there's and a level of, like, protection.
Yeah, and so, like, I think sometimes, even though in monogamy, unfortunately, because people pour themselves into relationships so quickly, they isolate so fast. It doesn't happen overnight, of course, but it isolates so fast. So sometimes those red flags are not seen as quickly, you know, as soon as it would be in a different situation where other people are kind of involved. Once again, it does happen. Did not say it does happen, but one benefit I do see is the fact that there's other people kind of like peeping into your relationship because they're not.
Yeah, you just have more eyes on you and more people looking out for you.
Yeah, so like that's something I've, you know, not even see as a benefit. Have like received or seen it in action or whatever, like even it's just something you've noticed over time. Like I even saw some stuff with my ex-husband, like, hey, your girlfriend seems to be doing some things that just don't sit well, and I've noticed that your behavior is changing. And he kind of realized that she was doing emotional abuse to him. It wasn't, you know, just passing conversation, like it's a little bit, and I'm like, no, man, you know, I said, maybe you should bring it to somebody else, just because I'm like, obviously I'm gonna have some type of bias over it, because you're also my, you know, you're my husband, but yeah, it was emotional abuse, and it was getting pretty bad, and so like, I'm happy that I saw the red flags, and he was able to say, you know what, maybe I should just look at it, like, I don't have to necessarily agree to right now, but let me just look at it, and yeah, it was pretty bad, and I'm happy that it got handled real, in time, I would say in time.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's something that I hadn't thought about at all, but that makes sense that if you just have more people that you're intimate with, emotionally, romantically, whatever, more people that are let into an intimate side of your life and that you trust and that see more of your life than maybe just a friend or an acquaintance, you're having just more eyes on you in a way that can, and also same thing with the, you know, having more eyes to keep you accountable and more people saying, yeah, hey, like that, maybe that's not, if this partner said it's a problem, I also feel like it's a problem. Perhaps it's a problem. And if you do have partners that you trust, which hopefully you do, then you also, it's always a flip, kind of two sides of the same coin where you trust them, but then you also have to trust a partner when they say, especially if it's multiple partners saying, hey, you're doing this and it's hurtful. Then it's like, well, if you trust them to be your partner, you most likely would trust them and trust their judgment in terms of if there's something that's going wrong, especially if it's multiple people.
Yes.
I can totally talk myself out of it when it's one person and I can just convince myself, oh no, you're wrong. You're making it up. Like, no. Like, I don't do that. But yeah, the second that I've got like a friend and a partner, or like my sister and a partner being like, yeah, you just did it to me, I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I do that, don't I? It's not as easy. Yeah, it's not as easy to dance around. Well, yeah, no, those are, that's a great way to handle the benefit topic. Mm-hmm. And let's end on decolonization. It's kind of a interesting one to end on, but you talk, like I said earlier, you talk a bit about decolonizing polyamory on your page. For one, like, what does that even mean for anyone who's coming into that completely blind?
Yes. So decolonization is important. So colonization, as we know, generally speaking, is just European, American, inclusive Australian, people going and colonizing indigenous people, colonizing their land, like whether it was the continent of Africa, South America, Central America, like Asia. It just that whole gist, that whole, like, these major continents of brown and black people, that when the colonizers got there, especially if they're influenced by their Puritan and, you know, Christian mindsets, that just destroy the entire, like, basis of their lives, whether it's from, you know, just, I can't even get to the detail, but at a minimum for me, I'm really big on decolonizing black people, because of the forced diaspora we had, black Americans, specifically, let me say black Americans specifically, how our relationships even form in America were like, almost like experiments, you know, like they're almost experiments. So when I say decolonized polyamory, I'm talking about like removing all that colonization, because even in polyamory, even the terms that we use in polyamory, we're not, the word polyamory was created by, you know, the making of those two words was created by a white woman who's pagan. Excuse me, she passed away. She was pagan. Like, even how she defined polyamory is not how we define it today. And I always mean to say, like, even her, nothing against the lady, right? She still has some very colonizer ideologies in those spaces. Like, I'm pretty sure some of the pagan stuff she was practicing was really just some forms of indigenous mixing, you know, like Native American taking some of the, I've seen it. I've noticed it. I'm like, okay, so like even that could be a problem, right? And decolonizing polyamory allows black people to get back into a space that we already had in the first place. I'm not saying that polyamory ends and begins in Africa. Definitely didn't say that. But there's things that are still very valuable to talk about. Decolonizing polyamory is not only decolonizing just how we view our relationships, it's decolonizing the queerphobia. Like, that has been very deeply internalized for black people. We seem to be on the slower upbeat on, you know, being more comfortable with LGBTQ as a whole community, right? That is from slavery. That is from colonization. It even predates slavery when they were coming to West Africa, just kind of like trying to get a feel of things, and how they wrote about the West Africans and how they felt like, you know, polygynous people or polyandrous people were hypersexualized, even though they were literally going there and sexually assaulting women. It blows my mind. It blows my mind all the time. And I don't think people realize how much of an effect that has on black people's access to polyamory, the education we are getting, and how comfortable we feel about it in our community. It's deep. I'm telling you, it's very deep. Some of the ideas against polyamory in the black community are even anti-African. They're anti-African, internalized anti-blackness. It's sad. I mean, it's sad. Like, I even sometimes I'm in some discussions with people who also consider themselves educators, and like the disagreement we had about the word fluid bonding and fluid exchange. I don't know. So fluid bonding, let me say this. Fluid exchange essentially is the exchange of bodily fluids, typically focused in sex. Okay, just typically focused in sex, BDSM, that realm, okay? That term has been seen as the best term to use versus fluid bonding, because fluid bonding is like, okay, if you're exchanging fluids or those fluids, there's some type of bond being made, right? I argue that saying that fluid bonding is the better term is anti-black. People completely lost their mind. I was like, it's not even anti-black. I'm just saying anti-black at top level. It's anti-indigenous to me. People of color, like, because of the fact that in some of these cultures, for black people who may practice hoodoo, or voodoo in the Caribbean islands, or whatever it is, that I'm not even going to list down every single thing, sharing fluids is a bond. Like, it is like written into like the soul. Like, it's a concept. Like, I literally did a whole video about, hey, yeah, like, when you are all saying that fluid exchange is a better term, you're literally erasing people who are black who practice hoodoo, or just general black Americans who see that a fluid exchange is a form of bond, a spiritual bond or connection or some type of exchange. Like, people who practice hoodoo, I practice hoodoo, it's actually like I can't even explain it. It's actually like a form of magic. You can actually use it in your work. And I just feel like, I had to remember these conversations about fluid exchange and fluid bonding. There was no one black at the table. There was no one who was brown or black at the table. There could not have been. I don't, even if there was, you know, even we have to kind of remember, like, Huh, where am I coming this from? Like, is fluid exchange a great word to use? It's great. I think it's a great word to use. I also think fluid bonding is a great word to use if you're someone who's spiritual or maybe religious.
Right. That's about not erasing one of them.
Yeah, I think it's a valid term. And I know, and that's what I mean by decolonized polyamory. That's how deep it's gotten. Like, those words are like being, you know, we don't even get to space to even like have a conversation or unpack. And like, I mean, I got some kickback for the fluid bonding thing, and I will stand on that hill and die on it. You may not mean it that way. You may not have thought to yourself this is anti-black, but I'm going to help you understand why it's anti-indigenous, anti-black, why it's anti, just in general, anti-spirituality. I'm not even going to get into like each race, because everyone has their own thing, you know, because right. Even there's even people who are white. They're like, yeah, like I practice this and we consider this a fluid bond. And like, yeah, I understand fluid exchange. We were talking about like in a very medical tense. We're using very, you know, general language. Right. But for me, this means the same thing. Like, we got to be careful with these words. Sorry, we're like a rant on that. That's like my.
No, that's thing. Fine. It's gotten, I guess, from what I received from that is just that it's gotten so incredibly, like, colonization is so deeply ingrained in how everyone is using any type of verbiage surrounding anything at this point, mm-hmm. that it's like, it might not be an intentional thing for you to be actively being anti-black. However, when a black individual says, hey, here's the history on this, here's why this is anti-black, because once again, like, I think that there, I just read something recently saying that the reason why, one of the reasons, many reasons, but one of the reasons why specifically white women need to listen to black women when it comes to history and to the way that the world works is strictly because there is a different insight that black women have because of the generations and generations and generations of things being passed down and things being taught that never got taught to white women. Like, it never entered our education. It never entered our home space. And that one of the reasons why it's so vital to listen to black women is like the world of knowledge and education that is in the black community that black women are generous enough to try to share with white women, and white women have historically received it so poorly and been so defensive and so quick to villainize people. It's so foolish when you think of like it's simply education that we don't have, and we haven't had access to, or it hasn't been passed down. Mm. And it's amazing how defensive and how quick the guards can be put up in the walls when it's simply someone trying to share information that you might not have. And so I was just talking about, I wrote an article on the Amber Heard, Johnny Depp situation and just the lack of nuance, and how nuance itself, the nuance that happens when we're talking about sexual assault or sexual abuse, it's the same type of nuance that we're talking about in white supremacy and in racism, because you're talking about just people feeling at the base of who they are so uncomfortable with the idea that anything could be in the gray, and you could be working towards being a good person and still have these like anti-black, homophobic, fatphobic thoughts that you're having to fight off and correct and work to retrain yourself and relearn and unlearn all these things that society has taught you. The idea that those two things can exist at the same time is so hard for people to grasp. And it turns into this thing of like, And it can be a very difficult thing where you're like, oh, well, you said that I have an anti-black thought. Like, that means that you think that I'm bad. Like, I'm not bad. And it turns and escalates so quickly. But yeah, if a black woman is saying, hey, or a black individual period is saying something about a like black history or the history of something that is their community, chances are you as a white person probably don't know more about that than a black person. Pretty unlikely.
Even think how like information was shared against in the black community, because we didn't have to have access to books, and you know, obviously literacy was a thing, or even the best books. A lot of stories or a lot of concepts were shared via oral history. Oral history was incredibly devalued. It was one of the first things I had a problem with when it got to these places where these quote-unquote savages are walking around, you know, like the first thing they had was like, you guys have oral history. Like, I was talking to my partner's from the Ivory Coast, and we talk about like some of the first things that the white men did when they came into these spaces, and it was get rid of the religious or spiritual priests or priestess, And it was handled, who's a historian? Who's a historian? Who's talking? Who's in here telling all the stories? Like, shut that down. So even I was in Tempe, said, you know, like, Black people were brutalized from the second they got seen to the second they got to the over on the boat to the second they got to the continent, you know, North America. What I don't think people understand is even more so why somebody calls polyamory is that even in slavery, especially the beginning of slavery when they were still bringing in Africans to America, or even, I mean, America, you know, freaking any Haiti, you know, all these places, right? Some of the Africans, while they're in different tribes, they're still trying to mimic some of the things they had done at home. Like, they had to try to mimic some of the things, like whether it was like with food, like trying to find things that are similar to what they ate. Which is why there's a big misconception how Black people call sweet potato and yam the same, a yam versus a sweet potato, and how we get that confused because that's ancestral. Our ancestors trying to find the nearest thing. Yams don't exist here. We don't grow yams. There's no yams in America. So they picked the nearest thing. Yeah, that's just how I felt too when I read, like,
oh,
you know.
Oh, that makes me so sad.
Yeah, like, so they picked the next best thing to mimic that, right? So those very distinct, like, you know, like when we call gumbo, like the gumbo, like the super gumbo. So the term for okra, which is in the gumbo, is called gumbo. Mm-hmm. In parts of Africa, like where my partner's from, like we had a huge misconception. I'm like, yeah, this is okra. He said, no, it's gumbo. And I'm like, no, this is okra, bro. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, it's gumbo. I'm like, no, gumbo's a soup, dude. Like, you know, and that
this is a vegetable.
Yeah. So understand that same mimicry, or that same trying to keep things similar, trying to make some type of order of this chaos, was navigating some forms of non-monogamy. There were African tribes that practiced non-monogamy, not polyamory, not polygamy. I'm talking about non-monogamy. There were tribes, quite a bit of tribes, especially with when you start talking about the Yoruba, where they didn't really use heavy gender terms. They had gender terms, but it wasn't like man, woman. Like, it wasn't like that. It was there's tribes where
it wasn't as binary.
Yeah, there are tribes where the gods were non-binary people. So, or non-binary gods, I mean, different people. So when any type of like flex of like a certain man wants to have multiple women, that was shut down. That was immediately shut down. If there was any flex of poly, even though polyandry wasn't super, super big in like where they were going to, there was still, that was shut down. If there was anything that was like non-Christian like, which is interesting because then we're bred to animals. So it was just like, I'm like, so where is even our attachment to non-monogamy is this feeling of being bred. Like, even I have to unpack that sometimes when I see people who are navigating polygynous dynamics. I'm like, please don't be like treating women. I have to even get Black people like, hey, don't, women are not capital. Like, you're doing the same thing to Black women that the slavers did to us. You're treating them like breeding grounds as a form of capital. Children are capital because they bring more wealth, right? Black men and Black women have internalized ideologies, and that comes into polyamory. That's what I mean when I'm talking about decolonized polyamory. It's so much deeper than just like, you know, nothing against anyone, but it's so much deeper than me just saying like, hey, you know, make sure you leave a safe space with Black people. Like, that is something that you may not have even thought about. Like, this is some deep, 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 deep shit. Like, there's some stuff that takes some time to like feel like, that's why I don't really believe that I don't really believe there's a Black safe space for Black people in white communities as it relates to non-monogamy. I just call bullshit. I do. Because there's no way you're going to know what I'm talking about. There's no way. Yeah. Unless you, even if you can have the blackest partner of all time, the most ethnic person of all time, there's no way you're going to be able to pick up these nuances that you're speaking about. Like, you know, how are we getting this information? Like, the fact that Black bodies have historically been hypersexualized and fetishized. The Mandingo clubs of the early 1900s. Literally sex clubs where white women would go and have sex with Black men, which further into the Queen of Spades fetishization, which is done in the swinger community, which is a white woman who only has sex with Black men and whether her husband's around or not, or her partner's around or not. This is a fetishization of Black men. This manifests in polyamory. Yep. This manifests as non-monogamy. So that's it's what I mean
deep
by...
On deep.
Yeah, to the point that Black people have fetishized themselves. Like, there's this like idea that Black men have bigger penises, like worldwide. Like, no, like when you start looking at the countries, yeah, there's some African countries up there, but that every country up there isn't on the quote unquote the big dick list. So it's just like all these. I mean, but this is something that has to be really kind of talked about. Like, these are real, it's mind boggling, and I really that's why I spend so much time in like Like, I haven't, like, gotten to those parts yet with my page because I have to be conscious that it takes a while to break that down. Like, it takes a while. Like, right. I need you to be on me. If I'm this, I'm talking about level, we talking about 400 classes, right? What I'm discussing here. And, you know, people are still trying to process their high school AP class. So, like, they're just trying to process, like, oh, I'm polyamorous. I don't want to go and say, yeah, but guess what? The man held you down. And that's what, that will ruin someone's entire experience. So I have to be very cautious about that. But for me, it's been a journey. And if anything, as much as I find it necessary, it's been a very painful journey. Decolonizing how I perceive polyamory, non-monogamy, because I didn't realize how bad it was. I'm not saying that sounds weird when I say that, but you don't necessarily realize how bad it was, like, until you're actually in the room. Like, we got fucked. This is really bad here. This is not a good space. And so it just takes some time. I will be the sacrificial lamb and try to process information before I give it to the people around me, because I do think it needs to be out there, and I do think we need to reassess how we see relationships and also why Black people aren't always in polyamory, because we were forced to mimic some forms of polyamory in the sense of breeding. We're bred like animals. So it's, of course, there's going to be a lot of Black people who are like, no, I don't want to do anything like that. I'm not an animal.
Yeah,
like, I don't
want to be the generational people. Trauma.
Yeah, like, it's, and we were seen like we were, especially Black women, and you know, we were seen like we were freaking, like, hypersexualized, and we wanted the white man, and that's why we could never be sexually, you know, satisfied, and that's why we were with, you know, multiple men all the time, even though that was literally what they were doing to us. They were forcing us to do that. So I'm just like, so yeah, it's an interesting process. Yeah.
Yeah, just trauma on trauma on trauma, and then you mix that into people living, and I guess that's part of it too, is you've got generational trauma on generational trauma on generational trauma on generational trauma, but then you also have very active trauma that's happening now, because the world has not in any way, like, we're not past it, and so you've got, you're handling a lot of generational trauma while also trying to actively figure out how do I process and hold space for, I've seen so many different pages, Black therapists just trying so hard to give information and resources on, like, how do you rest and how do you recharge and how do you avoid burnout, because it's like you're processing. Me and my partner were just talking about this, just about the work and the effort and the energy that goes into trying to heal from trauma, and how it's like a full-time job. Like, it takes so much time. But if you've got generational trauma on generational trauma on generational trauma, and then you've got active trauma from just living in the world as a person in a Black body or a brown body, you've got it. It's just, it's piling up.
That's why I think we're seeing more. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, please go for it.
I think that's why we're seeing, I was talking to my mom there. I think why we're seeing more influx peak of Black suicide. You weren't seeing a lot of Black people kill themselves like that. And that was like, even the Black crime that's happening, as far as, when I say the Black crime, I'm talking about the active shooters, not interracial crime. The active shooters. I'm honestly mind blown. But then I'm also like, you know what? Not surprised. This comes from not being able to, like you said, manage trauma. Or trauma not being, or not having the means by which to get access to it. It's a whole different realm. Same coin, different realm of, like, the white shooters, right? Or, you know, but now with suicide, I think it's like the same realm of, like, depression, all that. But, like, having, like, the numbers I've heard or seen, there's even, like, videos or whatever of Black people committing suicide that had access to resources, right? So maybe they were going through therapy. Maybe they were getting more acclimated, more educated, that it is debilitating when you start thinking about how bad it is. It will send you to that realm. And I think that's why we're seeing these numbers kind of come up. Like, even Black people are like, oh, this is what we say. We don't usually do this. It's not something we usually do. And I'm like, yeah, because we're having more access to information, and your kids and your grandkids are kind of just feeling like there's nothing they can do. I don't want to make it, like, dark, but it is something that it is a reality. Like, I've recognized, I'm like, that's why I'm really careful about what I put out, because I don't really want to, like, go deep dive and just, like, you know, it,
overload.
And that's just, and I'm just talking about, like, being Black. I didn't even add if you're disabled.
I got a whole nother conversation there.
Like, you know, and that's just across the realm for marginalized people, you know, whether it's in levels of intersectionality, whether they're just simply, not simply, you know, they're just a woman, or they're just, you know, a disabled person. Like, when you start adding those things, like, if you are, like, I start thinking about, like, people who get like treated the worst. And I'm like, the stack up was like, okay, if someone's disabled, a disabled trans woman who is fat, what is she going to do? And she's black or she's brown. That's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. That's it. That I'm like, and then you start looking at the correlation of crime against these people and how they're dehumanized. I'm like, the numbers don't lie, guys. You know, they don't lie. So it is something to really pack up. I think decolonization, no matter who you are, white or black, whether you're Asian, black, whatever you are, I don't even care. Like, decolonization in general, when it comes to non-monogamy, should be taken very slowly. I think that everyone should take a time to really process that. Because, you know, even if you're white, I don't want you to be in there like, oh my, don't do the white guilt thing. Don't go in there like, oh, it's my fault. To take a step back. Take a step back, reassess, come back to it later. You don't overload yourself with information, because it is debilitating. It is disturbing, to say the least, right? So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely been, I think, a learning curve for a lot of people in the last like 2 or 3 years with the just everything going on in the world and how much is being talked about. I think even with just news and trying to cope with things, and I have learned, I all of summer 2020 I was like on my phone just like, I have to learn, and like my brain was just like exploding, and I didn't realize until after, when I was like so burnt out that I like couldn't sleep, couldn't eat, was just like destroyed. I was like, I think I did this in a foolish way. Like, I don't think I did this smart. And I had to totally like reset and be like, okay, maybe me turning off my phone for a day is not me being a terrible person. Like, maybe that's actually a good thing every once in a while.
Deep dive into it with like a little, like, you just deep dive with one tank and you're like, I got it, I'm fine. I'm like,
yeah, literally. And yeah, it's not the smartest, or even just it's just not realistic. And the access to information, Google is an amazing resource, and it is a resource that can kill like simultaneously. It can be so helpful and it can be horrible. And it really depends on what type of boundaries you're able to set for yourself, and whether you're able, have the resources, have the time to be able to rest and take time to process. If you have mental health resources to have people help you and hold you accountable and help you process through that. Cause I even just that, me having access to a therapist, it was my therapist being like, hey, you gotta fucking slow down. Like, this is not good for you. You have to stop.
Like, I know everything.
Yes. No, literally. And I think that the feeling like you owe things to people, because I've done that even on my blog, feeling like I every time anything happens, I have to have an opinion and I have to give some sort of something. And there's been a realization of like, I am 23 and the expectation for me to expect myself to have a fully educated response to every single crisis is not realistic. And not only is it not realistic, I'm going to put myself in a position where I put my foot in my mouth because I don't know what I'm talking about. And I assume that I should. And then I say something out of my ass, or I don't research something full enough, and I put something out that's actually a harmful resource and not a helpful resource. And so, yeah, I think the taking time, my whole podcast is centered on being mindful. You can always learn, like, you can always grow, but I also try to kind of like do the little like, but also like.
But that level of discernment you have is incredibly high level. You have a very high level of discernment to recognize that at 23, to say, you know what, this ain't the booth. You know, I should probably take a minute to process this, right? And I'm saying that because I've been around people who are twice your age who do not have that discernment. They're like, nope, I got an opinion and I'm here to save the world. Like, hey, wait a minute, I know you have some things you want to help, but like, you need to take the time to listen. This might be a time to listen. Right. I often say to people, you might just want to shut up. It's time to shut up. Yeah. Like, I know when time to shut up. If there's someone talking about some stuff, I have nothing. I don't know what it's like to be an amputee. So when amputees are talking about being amputees, I shut the fuck up. That's it. There's nothing else to say. Like, you know, I've had like the most, like, you know, sometimes one thing I would say, the biggest, while I have a very large platform, I would say the people that really kind of just get into my skin are white queers and white women. They are like I thought it was gonna be white men. No, they're the ones like, actually, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, I'm literally black. I'm literally telling you the black experience, and I'm telling you, hey, this is not really a good time for you to bring this up because it's for black people. You're like, no, I have an opinion. I should have an opinion about this. I'm like, I'm queer. I'm like, yeah, I understand you're queer. But this is about black queer people stuff. It's black people. No, I definitely understand. Like, I'm like, Jesus. Like, you know, like, I'm trying to save you before the vultures come. Because when the vultures come, if they're a white ally, you're done. I will say the most aggressive allies are white allies. I will say I don't know what y'all are going on. Y'all be out there, we'll burn your house down. Like, okay, we didn't ask for a house burned down, Billy. Please, relax. We need that. Thank you, though. Like, it's one of the funniest things to me is, when black people, we do check-in, but, when that white ally comes, and they come down with a fucking phoenix and a sword, and they're like, you should have shot. Like, I'm like, hey,
thank you for your support, but can we take a step back?
There were so many other ways to get to this point. Like, it's full funny to me. I think it's funny, but it's nice to see, but it's also funny.
Oh, yeah. But thank you so much for coming on. And also just thank you for the work that you do, because like you said, you're kind of putting yourself as a sacrificial lamb. And I'm sure that that takes so much mental energy and so much time and effort and having to deep dive into trauma that is also trauma that you are generationally connected to, which I'm sure is just like so exhausting. So thank you for doing that work. And do you have, and if you're not comfortable with this, let me know, but do you have ways for people to financially support your work?
Yeah, sure. They can use, I just zoned out. You can use my, my Venmo or my Cash App, which is going to be Coco. So COCOAY, just so like Y as in like Yankee. So COCOAY. Those are probably the best ways to find your support me. Or you can go into I have an Amazon influencer shop or an affiliate shop, which is literally amazon.com/shop/MarjaniLane. So pretty much if you find me on any money resource other than the two I just told you with the Cash App and the Venmo, it's going to be Marjani Lane always.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know. And then aside from that, I want to also give you a chance to plug anything you have to plug, your page, anything that people can find you on, learn more from you, anything like that.
So definitely, my Instagram is my landing zone, is my home base. And that is where you're going to find all of my content. I also have Marjani_Lane_version2 or _V2, which can be accessed through my main Marjani Lane page, which is more, accessible for people who may have vision impairments. I've moved it a step further or visual impairments as well as people who may not have, if you want me, I actually break down some of my, slides more. To kind of take away some assumptions of general language, so it's been very helpful for some of my autistic followers.
Amazing.
And I even went further to every single slide on my page from the past 2 months is written in text form on my blog, which is marjanielane.com or marjanielane.com/blog. That's for people who use certain devices where their device that they have can't read the text on my screen. So that way you don't have to, you can still enjoy the content without having to hope that your system can read the text on my little, my images. So I just think that's another way. I'm really trying to become more accessible. Probably most people are not only able-bodied people. That's just not
at all true.
So that's one of my most important, that's akin to me on decolonization. It's very important for me to do. Another platform I like to use right now, I'm really getting used to, is Clubhouse under Marjani Lane. I go into a lot of rooms discussing relationships, and I also have been in rooms or hosted rooms about polyamory. You'll be able to talk to me more intimately there. I don't typically go into long, drawn-out, intimate conversations on my Instagram because it's time-consuming to type everything out.
Yeah.
But on Clubhouse, I have no problem talking and engaging. So that's one of my kind of budding platforms right now.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I will link all of that because I think you're a great resource to learn more about this.
Thank
and
you.
I've had people reach out and ask about polyamory on. That was why we started. I started kind of looking and researching for people to have on. But thank you so much again for coming on and for your nuance and also just I guess, I don't know if gentleness is the right word, but I think you approach things in a way that doesn't feel shameful. And yet is understandable and is, it makes sense and it's easy to digest, but there isn't shame, but there is accountability.
Yes.
And I think that's a really helpful way to understand things, at least for me. And I'm sure I think I have a lot of white followers and a lot of white listeners. And so I think it's always helpful to learn from someone who you can tell wants you to do better and wants to hold you accountable, but isn't trying to actively shame you. And that can be a really, an easier way to learn, I think.
Yes.
So thank you so much for the work that you do. I'm sure you're exhausted. I hope you're able to rest. I hope that you're able to also just like take rest and, you know, all of that. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and leave us a review. You can also follow the blog on Instagram at Serafina Blog and visit us online at serafinablog.com. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. And as Marjani said, you also can take a break sometimes.
I will chat with you guys in 2 weeks.